Hey, everybody. Thanks for listening to our Foundation Bible Study here at First United Methodist Church, Murfreesboro. I'm Cliff Wright, the senior pastor. We believe that the study of Scripture is important for us as followers of Christ, and I hope that you find this week's study on the Gospel of Matthew meaningful and inspiring in your own personal life. Our Bible study meets each Wednesday at 6 p.m. in the sanctuary. And I also hope you'll consider joining us at one of our four weekly worship services at 8:30 and 11 a.m. on Sundays, both in the sanctuary and the Family Life Center. And as always, you can find us at our website, www.fumcm.org, or you can check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at FUMC Borough. The purpose of our Bible study is to help us fulfill our mission of growing disciples of Jesus Christ who know Him, love Him, and serve Him. I hope this week's study helps you in your own personal journey towards knowing, loving, and serving Christ in your life. I think next week, as I'm looking ahead, is going to be one of the most important that we've done since we've started. So you want to make sure and be here next week and get the word around to your classes and groups and encourage folks to be here. I just think next week's going to be a really important session for us. We're gonna cover a little more ground next week, and I just think it's going to be really important for you to be here. I want you to help me invite, encourage other folks to folks that you see tonight that are not here, invite, encourage them to get back, and perhaps even people that have, folks of our church that have not been here yet to come and be with us. Tonight's really important as well. If you'll open your Bibles to chapter 7, you know, we ended last week, we were talking about worry, not being anxious. So I'm going to read a few things tonight and kind of, I think this is important tonight on several different levels. Part of it's some of the specific things we're talking about, but also this is a great, chapter 7 is a great place to go to if you want to talk to people about, hey, what is Bible study about? What's the importance of Bible study? One of the things that's real easy to do is to take passages out of context. You can turn them into kind of anything you want them to be, to kind of pull a verse and pop it out of its context. And so when you're looking in context, that's where you get the real meaning of what's being talked about. So you know, look at chapter 7 tonight. Look at verse 6, for example. What we're going to do is we're going to go back and put all of this, and we're going to go to the end of chapter 7 and read that. It's real familiar, the wise man, the foolish man. We're going to read that, and then we're going to work backwards to kind of show the importance of putting things in their context. But chapter 7, verse 6, do not give dogs what is holy. Whew, that is kind of tough, isn't it? Don't throw your pearls before swine, lest they trample them underfoot and then turn to attack you. Now, who said that? Jesus said that. Jesus said that. Wow. So if you pull that out of its context, I'm going to tell you, you can go a lot of dangerous places with that. Well, what is up with that verse 6? In my Bible, I've got lots of things highlighted. I've got Matthew, you can tell, my pages are torn and ripped, and I've done a lot of work in Matthew, and I've got things highlighted, I've got things underlined, I've got things circled. Verse 6, I don't have anything. There's no highlight, there's no underlining, there's no circle. It's just like blank. It's sort of like, in fact, if I had anything there, it would be, stay away from this, just don't touch this. But we're going to touch it tonight. We're going to look at it tonight. What's up with this? Do not give dogs what's holy. Don't throw your pearls before swine, lest they trample them underfoot and turn to attack you. You remember again, last week, we can kind of see where there's a sort of almost like whiplash turns tonight. We're talking about worry, anxiousness. Don't worry. Don't be anxious. Don't be anxious about tomorrow. Trust in God. And then chapter 7, verse 1. What's the first verse? What's right out of the box? Judge not. Don't judge. Judge not that you be not judged. Well, wait a minute. How did we get there? We were talking about not being anxious and not worrying. We were talking about seek first God's kingdom and His righteousness, and all these things will be added unto you. And then the very next thing is what? Don't judge. Well, who's been talking about judging? How does that flow? What's going on here? And then, after talking about judging and always looking at the specks in other people's eyes, and we're going to come back to that. We're going to look at that tonight. Then the very next thing is what? Don't give these dogs what is holy. And then right after that is ask and it will be given to you. And we've talked about that one. We're not going to spend a lot of time on that tonight. But then that's, you know, the very next thing. And then we get into this verse 13 with enter by the narrow gate, for the gate is wide and the way is easy that leads to destruction. It just seems like it's all over the place. And then that leads us, after this enter by the narrow gate, the wide gate is hard, and the gate is narrow and the way is hard that leads to life, and those who find it are few. And then beware of the false prophets. Then we get to the last part, and that's where I want us to begin tonight. Verse 24, you know this story. A lot of you were like me. You grew up singing the little song, remember, about the wise man built his little range. You remember that one? Everyone then who hears these words of mine and does them will be like a wise man who built his house upon the rock. And the rain fell, and the floods came, and the winds blew and beat upon that house, but it did not fall, because it had been founded on the rock. And everyone who hears these words of mine and does not do them will be like a foolish man who built his house upon the sand. The rain fell, the floods came, the winds blew, beat against that house, and it fell, and great was the fall of it. And when Jesus finished these sayings, the crowds were astonished at his teaching, for he taught them as one who had authority and not as their scribes. So you've got this last part, the Sermon on the Mount here. Jesus closes with this wise man and foolish man. Wise man building his house on the rock. And whatever came his way, he was able to withstand that. But all those who hear his words and they don't follow them will be like a foolish man who built his house upon the sand. Rain fell, floods came, and the winds blew and beat against that house, and it fell, and great was the fall of it. He's given us a choice there, isn't he? Remember how we talked, going back to the very beginning of Matthew, we talked about the choice that when Jesus was born, came into the world, he came into the world and he brought in God's kingdom. So now we've got the way of the world and we got the way of Christ, and we got to make a choice. Because why? Because they're different. The way of Christ, living by God's kingly rule, is different from the way of the world, living by the rule of our culture, the rules of our world. So you got two different worlds that are existing together, and there's that choice that we've got to make. And we've seen that several times now in our study, those places where we've got a choice. We've got to make a choice. So here's another choice. The choice of living by, here's God's word and his teachings, and living on that and obeying that, teachings and obedience, building your house on that can withstand whatever life brings our way, or going by the way of the world, this other way that doesn't withstand. I told you a few weeks ago, I can't remember if it was here, it was a sermon. It may have been a sermon. You know, one of the most heartbreaking things for me as a minister is being with folks who come to those first times of life where they're dealing with something, some challenge, disappointment. One of those places that happens to all of us at some point. You know, the thing about it is you look at life most of the time, for most of us, life is good. The good days far outnumber the bad days. But then there comes those tough times, and one of the things that's so heartbreaking for me as a pastor is being with folks who haven't taken the time to build their house. And what's Jesus talking about the house here? It's a spiritual house, isn't it? Isn't that what he's talking about? Our spiritual lives, that's what he's referring to. And those who haven't taken the time to develop that and build that, their faith, their spiritual life, their life of faith, And all of a sudden, this storm comes and hits them, and their house is floating down the river, and they're trying to shove a foundation under it. And it's heartbreaking because it's too late then. Now, it doesn't mean it's too late forever and ever, but it's too late for that moment. It's too late for that moment. So here's this place of this choice. So my question tonight is, okay, what is it that makes up that house that's built on the solid foundation, and how do we do that? And I think one of the ways we answer that is by going backwards. Now, I don't want to go back all the way to the first chapter, but you know, you go back just a little bit. We go back into the fifth chapter. Remember, we were talking about loving enemies, praying for those who persecute us, forgiving those who have hurt us, turning the other cheek. We moved into chapter 6, and we talked about last week, we talked about laying up treasures. Jesus said, don't lay up for yourselves treasures on earth where moth and rust consume, but treasures in heaven. And remember, we talked about that. What that's all about, that where our treasures are, that's where our lives are, that's where our heart is. And it's this putting our treasures of what's most important to us, making God be God. And that's one of those ways of building this faith life, building this house, spiritual house, on a solid rock that's going to hold, that's going to make sure and hold us up. And then we talked then about the, you know, not being anxious. And the way that we're not anxious is, again, by entrusting our lives to God. And I think that's one of the important parts of that last part of chapter 6. So when he says, don't worry, he's talking about, listen, Cliff, you can entrust your life to God. People of First Church, you can give your life, you can entrust your life to God, which is why he closed that with, seek first God's kingdom and his righteousness, and all these things will be, it's making sure that you know what's really most important in your life, and is that what I'm seeking, and is that what I'm really after? You follow me so far? So the first thing is entrusting our lives, trusting ourselves to God. Here's where that's important in reading that in his context. What's the very first verse of chapter 7, the very next thing? Judge not, he said. Another way of looking at that is, after you entrust your life to God, then you entrust other folks' lives to God. Are you with me? So you see where that fits. So you entrust your life to God, then you entrust others to God so that you don't have to control them. One of the things about judging is controlling others. And this is where you get to see a little bit, at least it does for me, it's where this strange verse about not giving dogs what is holy, that's a part of that entrusting others to God. Because one of the things that we do when we are not entrusting others to God and we're trying to control them, one of the ways that we oftentimes use to control other people is negative ways, picking on them, judging others, picking on others, finding the little specks, pointing those out. It's done in family dynamics a lot. A lot of times when there's one member of family that's wanting to control everybody else in the family, one of the ways they do it is they're negative all the time. You know any families like that? They're negative all the time. And they're always pointing out what's wrong. Maybe you've been a part of a family. Like, they're always pointing out all the things that are wrong with you. Oftentimes, this is an interesting thing about family dynamics. Oftentimes, when that doesn't work, you know the next mode of operation that is oftentimes used? If the negative doesn't work to control, what do folks oftentimes use? The positive. So if the negative doesn't work to control, then they use the positive to control, like gifts. Have you ever had anybody that tried to control you that way? Gifts, compliments, nice things. Have you ever had a time in your life where somebody gave you something and you really wish that they hadn't? Have you ever had that happen to you? If somebody said something really, have you ever had a conversation where somebody said something incredibly nice about you, and as you're sitting there, you're really uncomfortable with that because you know that it's a way of them trying to control you? And it's interesting when you see it that way, how this stuff fits together, because you've got a Jesus saying, listen, you've got to give yourself, you've got to entrust your life to God. When you do, that cuts out a whole lot of the anxiety and the worry. You've also got to entrust others to God, because you can't control everybody. You can't control everybody else. And one of the ways that you oftentimes try to do that is through the judging. We're going to come back to that. The other way, though, is if that doesn't work, well, we'll give them nice things. I think that's what's going on. It's what makes, it's how verse 6 makes sense to me. Don't give dogs what is holy, and don't throw your pearls before swine, lest they trample them underfoot and turn to attack you. In other words, make sure, and Jesus has been saying this for a couple of chapters now, make sure, remember we talked about it last week, that the way we do what we do is oftentimes more important than even what we do. The way we do what we do. The what is important, but the way we do the what, the reason behind why we're doing it. So if the reason behind why you're giving what is holy to dogs is so that you can control the dogs. Are you with me? So I'm going to give this to you so that, you know, I've got some control over you. Yeah. And don't throw your pearls before swine, because here's what happens. If they find out that that's going to, and I bet there have been some times, well, let me just speak for myself. There have been some times for me when that's happened to me, and I'm going to tell you, there were times I wanted to trample the gift underfoot, and I also wanted to turn and attack the one who gave it. You see? Because you know what's going on there. Let's go back to judge not, okay? Judge not that you be not judged. Now, here's where that gets a little bit tricky, though, for me at least. And it's the same way as last week. I keep going back to chapter 5. And in chapter 5, remember it said, Jesus said, let your light shine. Remember? Let your light shine. You're the light of the world. A city set on, this is at verse 14 in chapter 5. A city set on a hill cannot be hid, nor do men light a lamp and put it under a bushel, but on a stand, and it gives light to all in the house. So let your light shine before others, that they may see your good works and give glory to your Father who's in heaven. Part of that is witnessing. One of the ways we let our light shine in darkness is what? Standing up for what's right. Right's right, wrong's wrong. There are times when it's hard to know, right? Are you with me on that? There are times it's hard to know. There are times when it's not hard to know. There are times when we know this is right, this is wrong. There are times that we're, when what are we called to do? Stand up for what's right. There are times in that standing up for what's right, what does that imply? Standing up for what's right. Well, we're making a judgment, aren't we? I mean, in order to stand up for what's right, we're making a judgment. Tell you what, let's do it this way. Let's just get honest. Isn't that a good, that's a good thing to be, isn't it? Let's just get honest. We have all judged others at one time, right? Anybody disagree with that? We have all judged somebody at some time, right? We probably will again, right? Anybody disagree with that? See how freeing that is to be just upfront about that? Because now you can sit back and you say, okay, for the rest of the night as Cliff's teaching, you know, I know he's not just teaching to the person behind me. He's really saying this to me. See, we're all in that boat together. But we might say, I've judged, but I'm not judgmental. Right? I've judged, but I'm not judgmental. So let's get honest about that. We've all been judgmental. All right? We've all been judgmental. So Jesus says, don't do that. So you got over here, this thing, and sometimes when we've judged because we're trying to stand up for what's right and let our light shine, right? Sometimes it's not that good motive, but sometimes we're making a judgment because we're trying to stand up for what's right. And in doing that, we make a judgment. But Jesus then turns around and says, well, don't judge. Just stop it. Jesus is really getting clear on this one. Cut it out. Just stop it. Judge not that you be not judged. For with the judgment you pronounce, you'll be judged, and the measure you give will be the measure you get. Now we're kind of starting to get into stuff. What is judging? What do you think that is? What does it mean to judge someone? Well, this is what I came up with. I mean, just kind of a simple definition of judging that helped get us started. Judging is sizing people up and writing them off, right? Would you agree? Judging somebody else, sizing them up, writing them off. Now, why do we do that? Have you ever wondered why we judge? Have you ever wondered why we do that? We've all said that we have done it. We've all said that we're probably going to do it again. You ever wondered why we do that? Why do we judge others? Let me tell you what I think. This is what I think. I think we do it because we like it. Is that too honest? I mean, I think we do that. I think we oftentimes do it because we like it. And the reason that we like it is it makes us look better. It makes us feel better. See, if I can point out what's wrong with you, then it makes me feel better about me, especially if I've fouled it up. And guess what? I have fouled it up. So if I can point out the things that are wrong in somebody else, then it makes me feel better about me. Does this make sense? And listen, we all do it. You know, we all do this kind of stuff. So judge not. And you know one of the reasons why it's important for us not to judge? You know, in the church, one of the reasons it's important for us not to judge is because if you ask people out there that are outside the church, if you ask them why they're not a part of those of us who are inside the church, you know what one of the things they're going to say is they're going to say, hypocrites. That's one thing they're going to say. They're going to say, well, it's because, you know, church is full of hypocrites. That's one of the biggest criticisms that we get in the church today. You know, one of the other things they're going to say, the church is too judgmental. Christian people are too judgmental. Those are like two of the top three complaints you're going to hear. The other reason not to do it is because Jesus said not to do it. But what's he getting at here, though? What's behind all of these words? What's judging, sizing people up, writing them off? Why do we do it? Well, it makes us feel better. But look at what Jesus said about that. Verse 3, why do you see the speck that's in your brother's eye, but you don't notice the log that's in your own eye? Now we're kind of getting somewhere. Why do you see the speck, but you don't see the log that's in your own eye? Let me take the speck out of your eye. Or how can you say to your brother, let me take the speck out of your eye when there's a log in your own eye? How can you say that? Well, how about this for an answer? One of the reasons that we can say, let me take the speck out of your own eye when there's a log out of your eye, when there's a log in your own eye, is once again because, well, there are times when we like to do that. And one of the reasons we like to do it is when I can concentrate on the little bitty specks that are in your eye, I don't have to pay attention to the great big log that's in my own. It distracts me from what's going on in my own life. And you know one of the reasons why that's important for us to be distracted from what's going on in our own life is because it's hard to look at our own life. Would you agree with that? Isn't it a whole lot easier to look at what's wrong in somebody else than it is to look at the log that's in our own eye? Because have you ever had times when you looked in the mirror and you said, how in the world did I get here? I mean, how in the world did I get, how, look at what's going on. How did I get to this place? And what Jesus is saying is, wait a minute. Why are you doing that? Why are you saying, let me take this little bitty speck out of your eye when there's this great big log in your own eye? And then the magic word. What's the magic word? What's the next thing he said? What? Magic word. You hypocrite. What is a hypocrite in the context of this passage? You know, we've seen that before, hypocrite. Hypocrite was someone who was saying one thing, doing something else. That's not the case here. The case here, what's the hypocrite here? The hypocrite here is somebody that is always focused on what? What's going on in your life, not looking at what's going on in mine. You hypocrite, first. Oh, that's interesting. First take the log out of your own eye, and then you will see clearly to take the speck out of your brother's eye. I've preached on this passage before. I've taught this passage before. You know what I've always done? I found this out. You know, one of the things I've always done when I came to this passage, I never got to the end of verse 5. I always stopped way back up here at the very beginning of like chapter 7. Judge not that you be not judged. I at least got to verse 3. Why do you see the speck that's in your brother's eye, but you don't notice the log in your own eye? Why do you say, let me take the speck out of your own when there's a log in your own eye? That's usually kind of where I stopped. I might get to the part about you hypocrite. But this last part of verse 5, I never got to this. Jesus said, you hypocrite, first do what? Take the log that's out of your own. When Jesus says first, what does that tell us? When he says first do this, what does that mean? First do this. What does that imply? What does that tell us? It tells us there's going to be a what? If there's a first, there's going to be a what? Oh. See, you can do some Bible study. You don't even have to have a commentary. Did you know that? I mean, really, seriously, this is important. See, I read through this stuff, and I read this stuff for years and read right past the word first. It's kind of like therefore that we talked about last week. Therefore, that's really important. First is really important in this passage. But Jesus says, you hypocrite, first take the log out of your own eye. Why? Well, here's the deal. The log that we've got in our eye, remember when we talked about the eye is the lamp of the body, and what's down inside of us is like that light. What's in our soul, what's in our spirit, that light, it shines through and it colors everything else. Kind of the same thing here with the log that's in our eye. This thing, Cliff, that you're dealing with, whatever the deal that you've got to deal with, that becomes the lens through which you see everything else. Are you with me? And we've all got our stuff. We've all got our planks. We've all got the logs in our eyes. They're different. Some of them are similar. But you know, mine may not be yours and yours may not be mine. We've all got it, right? And what Jesus is saying is, when you haven't dealt with that, that becomes the lens through which you see everything else. It becomes the lens through which you see everybody else. Your undealt with stuff impacts the way you see those around you. Listen, when I'm around people and they're just ultra critical, have you ever been around somebody that's just hypercritical? They're picking out all the little specks that are wrong with you or the church, or maybe it's somebody that you work with and in the workplace, and they're always, or maybe it's somebody that's always picking at all the things that are wrong in the family, and they're just hypercritical looking and got all the specks. You know what that tells you immediately? There's something in their life that they haven't dealt with, and so they're trying to control everybody. There's something in their life that they haven't controlled that maybe they can't control, and they're living that out by trying to control everything in everybody else's life. Does this make sense to you? And so one of the ways they do that is that log that's in their eye becomes the lens through which they see everything else. And it enables them, in essence, to be able to see the little bitty specks in your eye. They're able to see it because they're so hypersensitive, because I got this great big plank in my eye. So Jesus said, first take the log out of your own eye, because that's what's coloring everything that you see. And then what? You'll see clearly. I've even made it down to this part in doing Bibles. I've even made it this far. And then you'll see clearly. Then you'll see clearly. Jesus even wrote a song about that, I think. I can see clearly now. The plank is gone. You'll see clearly to do what? Now, this is what's really fascinating to me. You take the plank out, then you can see clearly to do what? What does your Bible say? You say clearly to take out what? Oh, wait a minute. Yeah. Now you can see clearly to take the speck out of your brother's eye. Well, wait a minute. Wait a minute, you might say, right? Wait a minute. What did he say back at the first verse of chapter 7? Don't judge. Now at the end of chapter 5, what's he saying? Take the plank out of your eye. Now you can see clearly to do what? Take the speck out of what? Somebody else's eye. Is that judgmentalism? Is that being judgmental? No. Why? It's not being judgmental. It's being what? It's being Christ-like. It's being loving. It's loving in the same way that Christ loved. So here's where I, for years, I've had so much of this. This is still a troubling passage because it's challenging. But for years, I was troubled by it, by the part about not judging. Well, wait a minute. What does that mean? Are we supposed to, you see something wrong and we're supposed to just turn away from it? If we see somebody that's just, their life is going down this path that's going to lead to destruction and we know it, we're supposed to just set back. If we see injustice, and we're supposed to just sit back and we never say anything and we never do anything. And somebody says, well, it said, Jesus said, don't judge. But what else did Jesus say? Jesus said, don't judge lest you be judged. Jesus said, you want the same measure, the same measure. How do you want to be judged? How would you rather be judged? Let me tell you how I'd rather be judged. I'd rather be judged by being judged not. How about that? But since I'm not perfect, and since you're not perfect either, and since nobody else is, there are going to be times when I deserve some judgment. Is this making sense? And so when I deserve it, you know how I want to be judged? I want to be judged mercifully. What does that mean, to be judged mercifully? Well, I want somebody to look at the whole picture. How about you? Don't you want somebody to look at the whole picture? I want somebody to look at the, you know, I was talking today, visiting with, it doesn't matter. They're here tonight, so I won't divulge that, but wonderful visit. We were talking about stuff, and I was telling them, you know, they said, hey, just want to come and get to know you. That's what I love that, because one of the things I love about this is it helps us get to know each other faster. But I said, you know, one of the hard things about moving is I said, we're getting to know each other, but the people over in Clarksville still know me better than you know me, and that's hard. You know, I don't like that. You know why? Because I want you to know me. I want you to really know me. I mean, like, really know me. And so one of the things about judging sometimes is that we judge people without really knowing them. Or here's the other thing about judging. Sometimes we judge one thing. Have you ever noticed that? We'll judge one thing about somebody. We'll judge one area, one mistake, one time, one moment in their life without taking into consideration. You know what I want? If somebody's going to judge me, I want them to look at the whole daggum picture. How about you? I want them to look at the whole thing. And I'd kind of like for them to kind of understand a little bit about my background. How about you? You know, insecurities that I have and all that kind of, see, you know, you get to know the whole deal. But Jesus is not saying, hey, look, you don't ever say anything. You don't just, every parent, how many parents do we got in here tonight? Every parent knows this. You don't always say yes, right? That would be crazy parenting, wouldn't it? I mean, that would be crazy. You say, well, but you know, but I love them. No, sometimes you have to say what? No, because sometimes what we want is not what we need. So sometimes you have to say no. I think that's a part of what Jesus is getting at here. But what he's saying is that before we can do that, we have to deal with our own stuff. He's not saying you've got to be perfect before you can judge. He's saying you got to deal with your own stuff. So here's the way I see it. You see somebody that's messed up. Okay? Can you relate to that? Here's somebody that's messed up. What this passage is saying to me is when you see somebody that's messed up, their messed upness should cause us to do what first? Look at our messed upness. So their messed upness causes me to look at my messed upness and deal with my messed upness. And I deal with that once I, and listen, that can hurt. It oftentimes is. It's incredibly painful to deal with your own messed upness. But when you do it, it changes then the way you see others. And when you see the messed upness in them, you're not happy about judging them. you're not feeling good or better about pointing my finger to say, oh, yeah, I may have done this, and I may have done this, and I may have done this, but I sure didn't do that. No, instead, no, you're heartbroken. You're heartbroken. You're heartbroken over it. Why are you heartbroken over it? Because you remember how heartbroken you were dealing with the plank that was in your eye. Does this make sense to you? And when you do, then what happens is you deal with that plank that's in your own eye. When you're looking at somebody else, it's not judgmentalism, it's love. It's Christian love to be able to point something out that can help get them on the right path. Does this make sense to you guys? This is the way of looking at this that makes sense to me, and it's hard work. I'm going to tell you, it's hard work. Here's what I've learned about me and being in church, is oftentimes I'd rather do what's easy. I want to help. How many of y'all want to help? No, we'd rather help than not help, right? I mean, I want to help. You know what? Helping is hard. Have you ever noticed that? And sometimes I'd rather do the easy thing and think I'm helping when it's really not helping. It's just enabling. That's when it really gets, this is when this being a follower of Christ gets tough. And for me, a part of it is, hey, get the plank out of your own eye. So what Jesus is saying is, listen, entrust yourself to me, to God. Give your life to God. That's where it begins. Give your life to Jesus. That's where it begins. Now, give others. Give others to God too. And when you do that, you see them differently. Then we move down to verse 13, kind of talking about some of the same stuff. Enter by the narrow gate. For the gate is wide and the way is easy that leads to destruction, and those who enter by it are many. For the gate is narrow and the way is hard that leads to life, and those who find it are few. Enter by the narrow gate. You've got the narrow gate and the wide gate. What's the narrow gate and what's the wide gate? I think it's the stuff that he's been talking about all the way up to this point. Now, part of what Jesus is reminding us of there is this. The direction that we're headed in, whether that's the narrow way or the broad way, the direction that we are headed in will determine where it is that we get. Now, that's not rocket science, is it? But I want you to think about that. The direction that we're back to choice again now. So here's another choice. We started with the choice at the very end, wise man, with the choice of building our house on the rock, build our house on the sand. We can build it based on our obedience to Christ and our following Christ and our giving our lives to Christ, or we can go a different way. So now you've got this wide way and the narrow way. What's the narrow way? The narrow way is this way of following Christ. The wide way is the way of the world. There's each one of those ways leads us to a destination. The direction that we're going in determines our destination, not our intentions. This has just been something that I came across several years ago that's really made an impact on me in my life, not our intentions. Everybody in here has good intentions, right? We've all got good intentions. Everybody in here wants to follow Christ, right? After the first of the year, we're going to do a thing called Living a Better Story. I'm really pumped about it. I'm like majorly excited about it. It follows a premise that every life is a story. When I preach a funeral, what I'm doing is I'm summarizing somebody's story. You are writing your own story right now, tonight. Everybody in here is living a story. I think we all would like to live a better story. So we're going to talk about that after the first of the year. But we make our choices. We all have the intent. What I've learned is that a lot of people would love to have lived a better story, but they don't want to make the changes in their life to make that possible. Does that make sense? Everybody would like to have lived a better story, but sometimes that's hard work because it means hard choices to live that better story. So we all have got good intentions, but intentions don't get us to the destination. The direction, the roads that we choose, that's what gets us to the destination. And what Jesus is saying is, the road that you choose, that is incredibly important. And I think that's where all of this comes full circle and fits. And then he tells this wise man and foolish man. What is he talking about? Those who choose the way of Christ and following him. The question for us tonight is deep down, is have we made that choice? Are we making that choice every day? The question is, which road are we on? Which road do we find ourselves on tonight? Is it the road that is leading us to the destination of living the life, a Christ-like life that Jesus wants for all of us? Or where he's the most important thing in our life? Or is it going our own way? Are you with me? Is it going our own way? Which way? Which way is it? People from all different walks of life have found the joy that comes from giving themselves up to Christ. I want to close tonight before we come to prayer. I want to close tonight talking about one. When I was a little boy, but in particular, I remember this as a sixth grader. When I was in the sixth grade, I got my first basketball goal. It was a Christmas present. I can still remember it. It was cold as all get out. It had snowed a little bit, and I went out and shoveled the snow off so I could go out and dribble and shoot. I'd go out there. Gosh, I mean, it was there like every day, and shoot and shoot and shoot. It was, you know, up until the sixth grade, I had used all the neighbors. All the neighbors that their kids had a basketball goal, I would go to their house and shoot basket. My parents got tired of having the neighbors call and say, "Hey, you're get your son out of our driveway," and so they got me my own goal. My hero was Pistol Pete. You remember Pistol Pete? Pistol Pete Maravich. I mean, Pistol Pete Maravich was my hero. I wanted to do everything like Pistol Pete. I wanted the floppy socks like Pistol Pete. I wanted the long hair like Pistol Pete. When I was in the ninth grade, UTM, University of Tennessee at Martin, 10 miles from my hometown, had Pistol Pete come for a basketball camp. I signed up for that basketball camp. I got there, and Pistol Pete wasn't there. You know where he was? Some of you may remember this story. You know where he was? He was in the jail. Yeah, he was in jail in Knoxville. But they sent his dad press, and he taught us these drills. You know, the spider, where you know you do this, and the ricochet, where you take it and you throw it down hard in between your legs and catch it behind your back. Bam, bow. Got to be real careful on that one. When do you do that? Had to dribble behind your back, pass behind your back, all that kind of stuff. It was great. It was incredible. I loved it. But Pete wasn't there. Pete was in jail, and I forgave him. I forgave him because he was my hero. I wanted to be like him. That's who I wanted to be like. And then I found out that and Pete went into the NBA, and gee whiz, now he had the long hair, the floppy socks, and the NBA, which meant what? He's making a lot of money. And then I found out that he drove cool cars, and I thought, okay, I'm in. That's what I want in life. After Amy and I got married, we moved down to Louisiana, served in that conference for 12 years, and we were living in Slidell, Louisiana, about a 30-minute drive from Covington, Louisiana. Amy was working. She's a pharmacist, as you know. She was working in a pharmacy in Covington, Louisiana. She came home one day, and she said, "You know anybody named Pete Maravich?" I said, "Yeah." She said, "Well, I filled his prescription today." I said, "You do what?" She said, "I filled his prescription today. He came in, and, you know, he had a prescription. I filled his prescription." I said, "Babe, the next time that happens, you get on the phone, call me, then you count those pills as slowly as you can, and hold that bottle until I get there." Well, he was in Covington until he died. Some of you may know he was 40 years old. He was playing basketball, as a matter of fact, when he died. Shortly before he died, there was a reporter that was interviewing him, and this was right before his heart attack. And this is what he says. This is in the New Orleans Times-Picayune. This is what he said. Pete Maravich said this: "I would strive for things, but nothing ever satisfied me." Isn't that interesting? I just find that interesting. I would strive for things, but nothing ever satisfied me. I live my life trying to get stuff, and the more I would get, none of it ever satisfied me. Isn't that the way it is with stuff? Have you ever noticed that? Stuff, you know, you get stuff and it's real exciting. And is it exciting to get new stuff? Isn't that exciting? I find it exciting. Got some new stuff. Isn't it interesting how short that lasts? It doesn't last long. It's kind of like what, you know, folks tell me that with drugs or alcohol, you get a little buzz and then it wears off and then it takes more and then it takes more and then it takes more. It's the same way with stuff. He said, I'd strive for these things, but nothing ever satisfied me. I'd strive to get more things in my life, but none of them ever satisfied me. I'd strive for things looking for happiness, but nothing ever satisfied me. I was always looking for something else. Things never filled my life. I knew that there had to be something more to life than what I was getting. Now he goes on, he said, there's nothing wrong with dedication and goals. And you know what? I believe that. There's nothing wrong with dedication and goals and striving to become, to be better. He said this, but if you focus on yourself all the time, if you become the focus of your life toward which you are working, someday all the lights fade away, and at some point you become a fleeting moment in life. I lived my life one way for 35 years. I lived it for me. And then the focus finally came to me on what I really was. And he talks about how he was in his car. It was a Porsche. He was on the causeway. Some of you have probably been on the causeway, the 26-mile bridge that goes from Metairie, Louisiana to New Orleans and back. By the way, if you've ever been on it, you know it's straight. Man, it's like a dragway. I mean, it's a straight 26 miles. You can get going real fast. And he described a certain night of his life. One night, he said, I was driving 140 miles an hour. And it hit me at that moment. All I had to do was turn the steering wheel just a little bit. Just turn that steering wheel a little bit. Going that fast, and it would all be over. Everything would be over. My misery, my unhappiness, it would all be gone. Just like that. And I'd be out of it. And everybody would think it was just an accident, and I'd be free of all my pain. But something kept me from doing that. After that night, after that moment, I became a Christian. One day I chose to go another way. I chose, Pete Maravich said, to go a different way. I chose to live life another way. I chose to have a different focus, to have a different foundation. I chose to make Jesus Christ the foundation of my life. And a transformation took place in my life. My focus totally changed. Jesus transformed me. He changed me. I've never known the joy that I've known in the last 5 years of my life. All my life, I was searching for something. And everywhere that you are thinking of going, I've already been there. And I'm here to tell you, it's all a dead end. Except for making Jesus Christ the foundation of your life. That, my friends, is the narrow way. That's the narrow way. And it's the narrow way that leads to life. Here's the deal. You may be at a place like that in your life. And all I want to say to you tonight is there's an opportunity. There's an opportunity to make a choice. There's an opportunity to live a different way. And you can begin making that way by making that choice right now. I want us to come to this chancel tonight, and I want us to remember that as we pray. I want us to remember people that serve us. Is Officer Simpson still in the room? I saw him a little while ago. Would you just stand? This is Officer Simpson. He serves us. He serves us each Wednesday night. He's been here. He's going to be coming here. You know, it's an interesting thing about law enforcement to me. You know when they make the news? They make the news when stuff goes wrong, don't they? And so oftentimes they put their lives on line for us. You know, a lot of folks like officers. Are there first responders here tonight? Do we have any first responders? Would you raise your, if there are, do we have any first responders here tonight? One of the things we want to remember is we just want to remember these folks. It's maybe a small thing. I just want us to remember. I want to remember them. Remember what folks are going to be doing on our behalf and for us on Saturday. And I just want to ask you to keep them in your prayers tonight as we come to the altar. Here's the last thing I want to ask you to do. And this can kind of sting a little bit. Remember the plank that we were talking about a while ago, about how it's important to take the plank out of your eye? There's a card. There's some cards in the pews in front of you. Would you just take one of those? Just something to write on. Humor me on this, okay? Reach and take one. Just take one. Just take a card. And here's what I'd like for you to do. This shouldn't take long. I'm not going to ask you to leave it at the chancel rail, okay? I'm not going to ask you to do that. But I'm going to ask you to write down what you think your plank is. What do you think your plank is? What is it that you have that's a part of your life that you know it colors oftentimes the way you see the world? Well, I'm just going to ask you to write that down. And if you can't think of anything because you know you're perfect, then write down self-deception. Right? Just write that down. Just write down self-deception because that's yours. That's yours. Well, just write that down. And when you come to pray, I mean, bring it with you, but I don't want you to leave it. I don't want you to leave it. I want you to take it with you. Because remember, Jesus said, that's first. That's first. First, take that out of your eye. First, remove that. First, deal with that. That's how we become more loving of others that are around us. First, deal with your own stuff. Let's come and pray.